Welcome back. We're continuing our conversation on the counterfeit drug trade with Roger Bate, economist with the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research and author of Making a Killing, The Deadly Implications of the Counterfeit Drug Trade. And I wanted to turn attention to the impact this has, the counterfeit drug trade. Now, you mentioned in North America, Western countries, oversight is certainly much more rigorous than other areas of the world. But nevertheless, does this have an impact on traditional pharmacies and their supply chain, and also on internet pharmacies? You mentioned that a lot of the pharmacies that are posted as Canadian, internet-based pharmacies, really are not Canadian pharmacies and are based overseas. How does the consumer, first of all, should they be going to an internet pharmacy to purchase medications? And if they decide to do so, is there a means of determining legitimacy?
That's a very, very important question, and I'll do the best I can to answer it. I mean, no one is ever 100% safe, but on the whole, the issue isn't so much buying over the internet. It's being sensible when you buy over the internet. It sometimes seems startling to me that people will spend more time thinking about a pair of shoes they're buying over the internet or a CD than they would over drugs over the internet. And that doesn't, you know, you're talking about something that could kill you, so it is worth being careful. Buying over the internet in and of itself is not the problem. The problem is identifying as best you can the site of the company and finding out where they're getting their drugs from. So, for example, there are U.S. FDA-approved websites and National Association of Board of Pharmacies in the U.S., and I assume Canadian as well, although I have to be honest, I'm not 100% certain there, that approve certain websites. So, for example, CVS.com, Walgreens.com, Walgreens and CVS being huge retail chains, Drugstore.com, and quite a lot of Canadian pharmacy websites are actually based out of Canada, and they're fine. And there are others who then take the name of Canada, unfortunately, in vain, and pretend to be based out of Canada, when in fact they're based out of the Middle East or from China or India or elsewhere. My rule of thumb is this. If you can actually, if there's a physical address for the website in Canada on the website somewhere, that probably rules out nearly all fake companies. Most of them don't even bother to try and fake an address. Secondly, call the website up. It should have a telephone number. Call someone up. And if someone answers the phone, again, that's a very, very good sign. So first off, go to one of the approved websites and then actually speak to someone. I know you're buying, often people buy over the internet to save time, but it's probably the first time. Make sure that someone actually exists in that firm, that the location exists. As it currently stands, I'm doing a study on U.S. source drugs, drugs sourced from websites and buying from the United States, but those websites can, frankly, be based elsewhere. And from the experience that we have had and the assessments we've done in terms of quality and buying different types of drugs, if we could identify the location and we could actually speak to someone on the phone, 0% of the drugs that we've tested failed. Okay.
Right.
On the other hand, if we were buying drugs and we couldn't identify the company, or the drugs are being sent from all around the world and we have absolutely no idea, we can't kind of match up the drugs that we bought from the website purchases, then far more of those fail. So that is not a golden rule, and you could still be unlucky. But if you just go onto a website and you don't care where that website is and you order something and you don't do any more due diligence, then you may be buying something, a drug that is coming from who knows where, and it contains who knows what. So it's basic things that you should be should be focusing on. And then the question you asked before that about the main supply chain.
Yes.
It's often in the exceptions that you realize that the system as a whole works quite well. The heparin disaster from 2007-2008,
right,
where something of the order of about 100 North Americans died from contaminated heparin. What happened there was one of those instances where the counterfeiters were not only evil but quite smart. What they did was they substituted this oversulfated chondroitin sulfate, which was a much, much cheaper substitute for heparin, but it mimics the basic tests that Baxter, which was the U.S. company providing the heparin, that it would normally do to ensure that the heparin was legitimate. It mimicked the test that was applied at the time. Since then, they've changed the tests, and that loophole has been closed. But at the time, even in the United States and Canada, there is the possibility that those basic tests can be breached. And so very clever counterfeiters can even infiltrate the main supply chain, and it would kill people who weren't buying drugs over the internet. But that is fortunately exceptionally rare, and therefore that exception is it became newsworthy because very few people die in that way, but it can unfortunately happen.
We're in conversation with Roger Bate, economist with the American Enterprise Institute for Public Policy Research and author of Making a Killing, The Deadly Implications of the Counterfeit Drug Trade. And Mr. Bate has been very kind to be on for one more segment after the top of the hour. I really wanted to focus on the outcome of his book, that is, what will solve the counterfeiting problem and some of the policy recommendations that come from his research in this. And I want to give enough time to, since we've outlined the problem and the distribution, to try and encompass that in how those policy recommendations come forth. I'm Dr. Barry Dworkin. You're listening to Sunday House Call. We will be back after the break with continuing our discussion with Roger Bate on the counterfeit drug trade.